the Business on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Electric Ireland. Keep your energy costs under control with Ireland's leading business electricity provider.
Well, on the Garth Brooks concert issue, we've had a number of interesting texts. One of them says, the Phoenix Park was good enough in 1979 for St. Pope John Paul II. It accommodated a million, easily. What's the problem? So there you are. Maybe it's as simple as that. Broadband access and broadband speeds are certainly things that exercise the minds of many. This week, the ESB and Vodafone signed a joint venture agreement to invest €450 million in building a 100% fibre broadband network across Ireland. If approved by the European Commission, it will propel Ireland into the ranks of the world's fastest broadband countries. We're joined now by Vodafone's chief executive and Cork woman, Anne O'Leary. Anne, how exactly is all this going to work?
So we're going to go to 500,000 homes and businesses in 50 towns in 26 counties. So it really is significant and transformational. So this fibre will be right into the homes, just like the electricity cable does at the moment. The difference between the fibre you'll be used to hearing about usually just goes to the cabinet, which is usually about a mile down the road from your home. So the last mile is copper, and this is what restricts the speed. And this is where you hear people going, I can only get 1 meg or 2 meg. So the difference, well, this will go right in, fibre end to end, into the home.
One of the things you've announced is it will initially go to towns, let's say like Cavan Town or Letterkenny in Donegal, fairly big towns. They probably already have a reasonable level of broadband from Aircom or from any of the other operators. The real challenge is to get to smaller villages and people in rural areas. When will that happen?
So our phase starts with kind of towns or villages with 4,000 premises or more on average. OK, so that's where we're going. However, the government is bringing out funding and a tender for the rural parts of Ireland. And there'll be funding available to get these connected. And hopefully through the joint venture company, we will be able to tender for that. Because if you think about those rural homes, they have electricity going in, probably over poles. So there's no reason that these rural locations can't get the 200 megs to 1 gig. So it'll allow them compete with any business in the world or families and children to have e-education or e-health or whatever. So they will not be disadvantaged.
So in those smaller population areas, the difficulty has been that it doesn't necessarily make commercial sense. So the government would have to subsidise that part of the project, which is what they're saying they're going to do.
Absolutely. So this is a great government initiative, and through our initiative and that initiative, our plan is to fibre up the whole of Ireland. But phase one is the 500,000 homes, and then we will look at accelerating phase two and phase three.
There are people, Anne, in country areas all around the country who are reading about 3G and about 4G and all of these high speeds, and they have such a bad mobile phone signal that they can't hold down an ordinary telephone conversation for more than a minute. Some of them have to climb the nearest tree, halfway up the nearest tree, in order to have a phone conversation. It all seems alien to them.
Look, we know our customers say voice is as important as data. We all talk about data and the consumption of data and the need for data, but basic voice services are absolutely key. And again, our commitment is to continue upgrading, refreshing and developing not only our data network, but our voice network. And I think with the new technologies that we're rolling out, signal and quality will be much better right around the country.
So you're putting in new masts which will improve voice telephony, because some of those people would argue that through GSM and 3G and now 4G, it hasn't got any better.
So, well, I would say we're continually investing, and it is getting better because we see it, right? But for some people, and maybe in some areas, it's not fast enough or whatever. So we are continuing to, as well, put up new, what we call them is kind of like black spots, new masts in new areas to continue to make sure we're the best. Now, we need to make sure we have support from local planners and local areas to do that as well.
Huge changes in the mobile sector, not only in relation to technology, but also competition. Three buying the Irish operations of O2. Are you worried about them as a big competitor?
Competition is great. It's great for us and it's great for our customers. We welcome it. That's what kind of spurs us on. But our main focus is looking after our customers, taking the feedback from customers in terms of what they need. But also, because I'm part of a huge global organisation, I can learn from other countries as well. But as you know, Irish users are, you know, way ahead of some of the other countries. We have over 60% smartphone penetration. Irish people love their gadgets. We, you know, we talk a lot. 320 minutes of usage on average a month. That is three times the Germans' average. Our data consumption on smartphones is about 800 megs on 3G and then 1.6 gigs on 4G. So we just love it and we use it as better than any other country in the world.
What about for consumers? The three takeover of O2 means that there's one less player in the market, so there might end up being less competition.
Well, look, there's only 4.5 million people in Ireland and we have a significant amount of competitors. And also there are a lot of MVNOs there already. And we have new, as part of this, there's going to be new competition in the market.
Vodafone came to Ireland when it acquired Aircel, I think it was back in 2001, about 13 years ago. It has been an incredibly lucrative market for Vodafone and for other mobile companies as well. Is that because we've been paying too much in our bills?
You know, my view on Ireland is we pay a little too much for everything. It's an expensive country, right? However, the prices have been coming down. You see it in the results. There is more competition, but customers want more. So we give them more for less money. And I think that's going to continue.
But right? Also, regulators in the EU have been breathing down your necks on things like roaming, because the roaming charges have been so excessive. People have gone on holidays terrified of using their phone because they've come home in the past and been shocked when they saw the bill.
So roaming is a key differentiator for us. Because we're in so many markets around the world, we have networks that we can guarantee a great experience. So pricing is key. We've worked with the EU to be more transparent with our customers so they don't have to worry. And now you can manage your costs. And we're seeing a huge increase in the amount of roamers on our base that are enjoying those new rates. $1.99 for the UK, $2.99 for US, Canada and the rest of Europe.
Vodafone is a huge global business and a very successful business as well. You're the first Irish CEO of the Irish operation. Was it difficult during the recession period to go to head office or wherever it was and make a case for investing more in Ireland? And were they saying, oh, hang on a minute, the IMF is in there, we better hold off?
So, you know, it was interesting. Ireland was the first to kind of go into that recession. So actually Vodafone learned a lot from what happened in here because it kind of spilled off then to the other European countries. During those times when we needed to continue to invest, they did that. Because when times get tough, it's important that you continue to invest in your handsets, in your network and in your people.
You've got around 1,200 employees in Ireland. How would you describe your management style?
So I suppose if you came out to the Vodafone building, I think some people are quite shocked, right? I don't have an office. I'm probably the only CEO that doesn't have an office.
No office.
No office. So I come in every day like everybody else and it's open plan, no office or no desk, right?
So you just roam around.
You sit wherever, you just plonk down wherever and you get on with your day. And that is a kind of we call it a new way of working. So it's a very dynamic culture. It's all about kind of communication, working together, being agile, you know, delivering great business results.
So on a particular day, you might sit down beside one person and then another day you're beside the other. How do they react when the boss is sitting beside them?
I think they've got used to it.
Stop their online shopping, do they?
They've got used to it and it's fine, you know. I think they see me as very non-hierarchical, very approachable, very much one of the team. And I like that. And I think that kind of style has driven great business results and also has created a great place to work.
But you need to have some private conversations with staff. There are meetings, there are telephone calls. You know, it must be quite disruptive for you in your role. People would have to acknowledge that there are things you have got to do and say. And sitting beside, you know, whoever, some guy who does whatever in engineering, it's just not going to be practical.
So, look, if I need to have private conversations, there's places you can do that, right? But it's a culture, you know, and it's a mindset. And it's just, you know, about people coming in, working together to deliver for our customers.
It reminds me of the story of the boss who goes over to the employee and says, why aren't you working? And he says, because I didn't see you coming. Is there a bit of that about it?
Look, the new ways of working and hot desking, that's one part of it. But also part of it is about empowering and trusting people. So, Richard, if you work for me, we agree what we want you to do. And then you figure out how you want to do it, in what way you want to do. So it's not about presenteeism. Those days are gone, that command and control type of leadership. This is really about empowerment and trust. And my view is, if I can get the 1,200 people that are in Vodafone getting up every day, figuring out what they need to do themselves and doing it, we'll have a much better business and a really happy, engaged employee base.
You're into fitness, I know, quite a bit. Do you do all of your exercise early in the morning? What time do you start?
Yes, so the way for me to be at my best as a CEO, I think you need to be mentally and emotionally and physically fit. You need energy, you're motivating and inspiring people every day. And so what I try and do is every day before work, I try and do something, go for a run or go for a swim, maybe in UCD pool, or go to the gym.
What time would you do that? What time
usually
would you start?
Look, I get up between 6:30, 6, depending on the morning, and head in there and then head to work, you know, for 8:30, 9. And then I work till 7 or 8 in the evening. But, you know, when I'm physically fit and I'm at my best, I just feel good. Gives me confidence. I think I make better decisions. It helps me sleep.
You've done triathlons, haven't you?
Yeah.
How many have you done?
Oh God, I couldn't tell. Maybe 50 or 60 over the years, or more.
Wow.
Maybe. So this year I did the Mallorca Half Ironman at the start of the year. I did Dunmore East a few weeks ago. I'll do the Galway Aquathon. I'll do Kinsale. And hopefully at the end of the year, I'd like to do the Kenmare, which is a beautiful half Ironman. And I set those as kind of goals to keep me focused. You know, it's nice when you're doing your exercise to have something. Look, I used to compete kind of seriously, and now it's about participating more and just being fit and healthy, you know.
When you were growing up in Cork, I presume you didn't think about becoming a business executive or a manager. What did you want to do?
No, I didn't think about it. And I was going to be a nurse. My mother wanted me to be a nurse. And the day before the interview, I kind of said, Mum, I hadn't really thought about it. I'm not going to do that. So my first job was in Nixdorf Computer and was kind of like office administration. That got me a taste for the business world. And then I went on to marketing in Reuters in London, and then into sales and Golden Pages. And obviously I started in fixed line business with ESAT Telecom. But
so you worked with Dennis O'Brien at the beginning, I suppose, of his telecommunications career.
Yeah, so I joined. It was very much kind of engineering. The fixed line is engineering, very male orientated. But joined that, and I learned an awful lot and loved telecoms and the technical side. I would have never thought I did, but I did. And then I went and I joined Vodafone in the mobile business, and it was bringing my fixed business. And obviously Vodafone now does mobile and fixed, as we see the world kind of converging. And again, I've learned an awful lot about that. And, you know, joining Vodafone, the gender diversity was great there.
Was your mother disappointed that you didn't become a nurse?
Do you know what? She probably thinks nursing is a very worthwhile profession where it is. And she probably would have liked me to be a nurse. Like, my mother's 84. She's in a nursing home.
What does she make of what you do now?
In Cork. She knows, like, I kind of doing well. And she says things like, are you running Ireland now? She doesn't really figure out the technology bit. It's a bit, you know. But I think she is proud. I suppose she can't figure out how it happened. But I suppose, you know, I was an only girl with three brothers, you know, the apple of my father's eye. He encouraged me and thought I was great and brought me swimming, and I used to be doing dancing and on the stage. And he's now sadly passed away. But I think I got a lovely, loving childhood and very encouraged all the time to do what I needed to do, and constantly thought I was great. So I think it probably gave me the confidence to do what I've done.
You've changed job along the way lots of times. Did you have a plan? You know, did you think 5 years down the road or 7 years, this is what I want to do?
No, not really. Oh, it was always about just being the best I could be. So whatever role I had, whatever job, I probably would have always got feedback that I was very good at it and high performing, but I put a lot of time and work into it, and it was very important for me that I did the best I could do. And I think being like that, it opens so many doors, because you know if you're at your best and you do your best and you get good feedback, you're given more opportunities. And I kept getting more and more opportunities and getting promoted along the way.
Vodafone is an unusual place because it's a big consumer business. You've got a couple of million customers, but you also have a few hundred thousand shareholders who ended up as shareholders through the Aircel deal. There was a Verizon sale of a stake there which brought cash to those shareholders, but there were a lot of mix-ups in the paperwork and the way that that was handled, and a lot of criticism of Vodafone.
And, you know, the administration of it wasn't ideal.
Did you get it wrong?
I think it could have been done better. But on the positive side, what I will say is the result of that sale meant Vodafone was investing 23 billion in its operating companies, Ireland being one of them. So the reason that I can build out the best and fastest 3G and 4G mobile network and do this investment with ESB to bring fibre, end-to-end fibre, to every home and business in Ireland is exactly because of that sale. So I'm really, really thankful that that happened. And my role as CEO is to continue to get that investment for Ireland so that we can compete with every country in the world and be the best that we can be.
Anne O'Leary, thanks very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you, Richard.